First public hearing is subdivision 2010-6, Cannon Road Investments LLC.
This is an application to consider the subdivision of land in an AR1 agriculture residential district in Indian River 100, Sussex County, dividing 130.427 acres into 233 lots under the cluster development concept, located southwest of Route 5, southeast of Road 303, south of Road 303A, and also being east and west of Road 307. For the benefit of the record, on January 14th of 2011, the commission received copies of an exhibit booklet. It has been available since that date. It includes a executive summary, a project overview, references to compliance with applicable regulations, including the zoning ordinance, the cluster ordinance, the subdivision ordinance, the comprehensive land use plan. It also includes two resumes of two of the presenters and also 22 exhibits, which would include maps, et cetera. And as I said, that has been a part of the record since January 14th. And with that, I would ask Mr. Abbott if he's received any additional comments from any agency in the subdivision application file.
Mr. Chairman, the Technical Advisory Committee report of December 10th of 2010 will be made a part of the record. And we did receive a letter. It's addressed to whom it may concern. They indicate that they received a copy of the public notice regarding this application and that they will not be able to attend due to a conflict, and that was signed by Mr. Lee. That's all I have, unless you have any questions.
All right, sir. We thank you. Mr. Lank, would you mind restating what the size of the parcel is again?
130.427 acres. As a typo, it's used a comma instead of a period.
I just wanted to make sure that we weren't talking about the world's biggest subdivision here. Yeah, okay, very good. Chair recognizes Mr. Schrader.
If only we had 130,000 acres to work with. Good evening, Mr. Chairman.
That'd be
gentlemen.
Worth about $130,000 right now, yeah.
And then 2 units an acre, that'd be a hell of a. Good afternoon, or good evening, Mr. Chairman. My name is Dennis Schrader. For the record, I represent Cannon Road Investments, LLC, the applicant in subdivision 2010-6, known as Pelican Point Phase 1 through 3. I have a couple people with me this evening, and it's almost, I believe, the third time that we've appeared in front of most of you in connection with this particular subdivision. But I have Frank Key, Jason Palkowitz, and Holly Hearn, who are from the firm of Solutions IPEM. I have Mr. Handler and Mr. Mitchell, who are owners. And in the back, we have DJ Hughes, was one of the traffic people that were involved in this particular project. Mr. Lank has advised you that we're here for a subdivision of land, and I'd like to correct, not necessarily correct, but at least give a different focus to that. This project was originally approved as a part of the Greater Stonewater Creek applications in 2003. Pelican Point Parts 2 and 3 were then approved in 2004, and then later on in 2007, Pelican Point was separated from Stonewater Creek, so in effect we're really a separate subdivision that grew out of what had been the original Stonewater Creek subdivision. Phases 1 through 3, the ones that we're dealing with this evening, were originally approved as a part of that original Stonewater Creek series of applications. As you may recall, we came here a couple years ago with a proposal for an RPC. It didn't go well for us. It wasn't well received. We withdrew the application before it went to the county council, and in doing so, we had the opportunity to review the comments of the public and of the commission in making its decision, and we think that the process or the project that we bring to you this evening reflects a thoughtful response to those comments and perhaps will be more suitable and more to your liking. As has been pointed out by Mr. Lank, we have provided you with a fairly sophisticated exhibit book that addresses all of the various concerns that you should address in making a decision. Again, I would point out to you that we currently have an approved subdivision on site, so in terms of where we're going to go this evening, we're not going to spend a lot of time talking to you about the comprehensive plan compliance, because obviously if you'd approved a subdivision, we comply with the comprehensive plan, and there are other things that we have to take as givens. The property is located on the west side of Route 5 on both sides of Cannon Road. It is 130.427 acres of land. It is currently approved as a standard subdivision. The present use of the land is as agriculture, and what we are hoping to do is come in here and persuade you this evening that a cluster subdivision will give us a better project and something that will be better for the county at large. In doing so, we are able to get this project to 233 dwelling units. We are located in a low density area, level 4 for state spending and strategies map. We do, however, have private roads that will go in. There will be one road that is closed, and that vacated road and the arrangements that were made with DelDOT to vacate that road will remain in effect. There is a private wastewater system that will be treated through artesian. There is a private water supply, which also is artesian. And we have a number of things that we need to talk to you about tonight. Mr. Key will be our principal witness, and he will describe for you an overview of the assembled tracts and run you through some of the things that are important for your consideration, including the cluster ordinance compliance, the recreation areas, open space, preservation of trees, how we responded to PLUS, and the alignment of the roads, particularly the interior roads, along with the DelDOT requirements. So I'm going to introduce Mr. Key at this time.
Ladies and gentlemen, if there's anyone here that has an interest in this application, apparently these gentlemen will be using a number of exhibits this evening. They're very difficult to see from where you're sitting. Please feel free to get up, go over, take a closer look. All we ask is that you do it quietly. All right, Mr. Key.
Thank you very much. Again, I'm Frank Key with Solutions IP. I'm representing Cannon Road Investments. Basically, I wanted to start with a little bit of an overview that I won't spend much time on because you guys have seen this before. This is generally a 4-mile radius around the project at hand. This is in the Long Neck area. We've entitled this the Greater Long Neck Urbanized Area because it is perhaps...
Mr. Key, I'm going to ask you to change profiles. If you would stand closer to the mic and talk to us from that side, there we go.
Can do. Basically, it's part of one of the largest urbanized area in the county. It has about 8,000 permanent residents out there and about 17,000 in season. So the population runs from about 17,000 to about 35,000, depending on the time of year. And that's what the project is situated within. This exhibit is intended to show that in greater detail than the smaller one. All of the yellow areas are either projects that are underway or have been approved in some fashion or other. And the project is the green area here that's not exactly right in the middle of it, but certainly a situate within that developing area. For this project, we went back, we reviewed the comments, as Dennis mentioned. We also looked at the community design elements in the comprehensive plan and the subdivision ordinance and attempted to respond to all those things. The way we do that is we begin with a site analysis that often we don't show the Planning Commission, but always do. And essentially, we take the project, we analyze topography, existing trees, cultural elements, if there are any, needs for buffer, impacts on neighboring properties, transportation, the need for linkage, through the site. For example, in the agreement with DelDOT, there's a provision for a road that terminates Townsend Road and then brings it through the project, ending at Cannon and then going on through to Route 5, so that shows up. You identify areas for potential amenities, low places that don't drain well, tree preservation areas, wetlands. All those things are considered in the site analysis, which helps us determine the nature of the design for the project. It's a fairly lengthy process, far more than what I've done here, but we did do that. In using that information as background, we began to design the project. In this case, as you can see, just in terms of design, there are three major parts, and one could say four if you include the stormwater management pond, because there are banks around it that you can basically walk around and do, you know, picnicking, things like that. Those parts are located such that from the entry, drive into the first major park, and there's kind of a turnaround there. It's large scale, though. The first small park is actually large enough for a full-fledged soccer field, which is what's shown there for purposes of scale. As you drive through onto the other side of Cannon Road, you can see that there are two other very large parks. And all of these parks are designed such that homes front onto them rather than putting them in the back of houses where you feel like you're intruding on someone's backyard. The other thing that we took into account was setbacks on the perimeter. There's always a minimum of 30 feet, if not 50 feet, from all the surrounding roads and surrounding properties, including even Pelican Point phases 4 through 7. More importantly is the setback along Route 5, which is considerable. It ranges from about 80 feet to anywhere upwards of 150 feet, depending on where you are. And then those areas were looked at. The parks, the stormwater management areas, are particularly low areas on the site where naturally you would put something like a stormwater management facility. And that's why you find them there. That's one reason. The other reason along Route 5 is because as a community design element, particularly in the comp plan, there's a provision where you try to increase vistas into a project or back homes away from surrounding roadways, which we've done in this case. Furthermore, you can also see that the orientation of these cul-de-sacs to the edges, the purpose of that is to prevent the rears of houses from being directly facing the surrounding roadway system. It's neither a good living environment for the person living in the house, nor is it good for the passerby. You know, it's the barbecue pits and the big toys and swing sets and all the clutter that we all have. So an effort was made to have those face each other and not face the roadways, as well as buffering from those things. There are existing trees on the site. There's a continuation of this block of trees here. We kept out of there. I think there's about a 20-foot impact into those trees, but that's all. The existing trees along the creek, which is a continuation of the corridor along Stonewater Creek and further even, was maintained. There's no wetland impact at all. There's no impact to those trees. And, in fact, there's more than 100-foot setback from the wetlands to the first lot lines. So in terms of amenities here, keeping in mind that Pelican Point is really phases 1 through 7. It's a whole project. 4 through 7 is a previously approved cluster plan. It was approved at 1.8 dwelling units per acre with quite a lot of open space and other amenities, such as swimming pool, clubhouse, and two tennis courts, one of which would be like a multi-purpose court where you could play basketball and other things. That's part of 4 through 7 and really not the subject of this. But taken together is the way the amenities work, because it will be one homeowner association and one collective set of amenities. Here, those amenities amount to the open space that's distributed, the sort of more urban in character parks. There's a tot lot shown here. There are small picnic facilities. There's a bus stop kind of centered here on Cannon Road, which can be easily adjusted if the schools would like to have it placed in another spot. Then there will be sort of centralized mail facilities. I'm not sure if it's one facility or several facilities distributed around the community, but they're there, and they're set up here in this first park. We did talk to the postmaster and to the director there, and their focus is on more centralized facilities. It's easier to deliver, and there's a little less hassle during construction when they're trying to deliver mail. One of the aspects of this plan that's important to note is the connection from this part of the project through 4 through 7 to this road here. The reason it's important is because in 4 through 7, part of the plan is to take Townsend Road, realign it here, and dead end it right here. Then it turns into a Type 3 county road and passes through to Cannon. In the case of transportation here, we've been to DLDOT. There was no need for another transportation study. The improvements that are at the intersections here and the multimodal paths and so forth are all, it'll mitigate the transportation impacts of the project, and they're happy with that, and we have an agreement as to what those improvements would be. That road, though, if you look at the preliminary site plan that you have in your package, there are lots on this road that face it right here, and it doesn't line up with the internal road in phases 1 through 3. This picture is to show you how that would be repaired in phases 4 through 7 if phases 1 through 3 are approved. The reason is because DLDOT does not wish to have lots facing this road. They're treating it like a public road, and so we need both to align this road as well as to get the lots that were facing it off. And so, again, if this is approved, then that alignment would have to change in phases 4 through 7 to work, and that'll be taken care of. Part of that process is to abandon Townsend Road from its intersection here all the way to the end of the property here at the creek. And that's part of 4 through 7, but it's also sort of an intrinsic part of the project as a whole. That's kind of the design in a nutshell. In terms of kind of a comparative analysis, the existing land use is a standard subdivision, as you're aware. It is the same 130 plus acres. It's 164 homes. The density is 1.26 homes per acre. The open space is 22.22 acres, which is 17%, as opposed to the required 10%. If you recall, when this subdivision was approved, it was approved before there was a cluster ordinance. They did the best subdivision they could with the tools at hand at the time. They later came back, of course, and did the phase 4 through 7 cluster that I was mentioning before. So now, the problem in part that we're solving is that this has sidewalks on both sides, 4 through 7, street lights, assorted amenities of that kind, curb and gutter and so forth. This subdivision has none of that. It's a standard subdivision. It swales, no street lights, no sidewalks, etc. So now we have sort of a disconnect. I mean, you really, without getting in the street, you can't walk from one end of phase 7 to the other and come out at Route 5. So we solved that problem in this. Basically, the proposal here is 233 homes. The minimum lot size is 7,500 square feet, although generally they're a little bit bigger than that. It's 1.79 homes per acre, which is the same density that was approved in 4 through 7. There are sidewalks on both sides of the streets, including around the parks, street lights, curb and gutter. It's a real cluster amenity, and I think that it tracks on the goal of the subdivision ordinance and the cluster ordinance and all in terms of community design with these elements. In fact, what you gain, and you can see it visually in terms of the green, in terms of open space, now there are 4.19 acres of open space, or 37% of open space, if you don't count the storm ponds. If you do count it, it's 43%. So we gained a tremendous amount of open space. In fact, I believe it's 2.5 times the requirement. It's a massive gain. It's really a case of the cluster ordinance doing exactly what it was intended to do. In terms of compliance, literal compliance with the cluster ordinance, to begin with, the cluster allows 2 homes per acre. It's 1.79, which is compatible with the previously approved 4 through 7, as I mentioned. There are certain design requirements for cluster developments that have to be met. In this case, the proposed development is in accordance with the latest amendment to the community design elements in the comprehensive plan. The housing types are single-family detached only. And in fact, the builders that are in Stonewater Creek are desirous of moving into the project, and fairly quickly if it's approved. What this project offers is an opportunity for the same size homes, same value homes, on a smaller lot. It's a lifestyle choice. What happens is 20,000 square foot lots or 3/4 acre lots come with on-lot maintenance. It costs what it costs to keep up your house and your yard. In this case, with 7,500 square foot lots, it's like squeezing the lot. and the excess pops out in the open space. So you have less on-lot maintenance cost, but you have more homeowner association cost associated with maintaining the open space that results. But again, it's a lifestyle choice. The values of the homes will be the same or at least similar in nature. The sizes of the homes are intended to be about the same. The market drives those anyway. It's not a sort of a developer choice or a builder choice. No lots abut agricultural areas, but there are setbacks around all the streets and all the abutting properties of a minimum of 30 feet. No homes are located within 50 feet of existing residential developments. No lots have direct access to state-maintained roads. No lots contain wetlands. The development is served by a previously approved regional wastewater system, too. It is a private system with Artesian, but it is a certificated regional facility. In terms of Chapter 99 in the subdivision ordinance, there are 17 items that have to be addressed. Integration of the proposed subdivision into the existing terrain and surrounding landscape is the first one. Of course, you can see from the site analysis how we went about doing that, how we integrated it by using setbacks, by creating vistas into amenities from Route 5, and so forth, by preserving forested areas and wetlands, providing assorted setbacks, whether they're required or not. The second is a minimal use of wetlands and floodplains. Of course, there are no impacts to wetlands at all. And in terms of floodplain, we're outside the 0.2% of annual chance floodplain. There's a map to that effect in the exhibit. Preservation of natural and historic features. Of course, there are no historic features on the site. As stipulated in our plus comments, you can see their review there. We did preserve almost 12.5 acres of woodlands on the site that exist. Preservation of open space and scenic views is another. The cluster itself aided us with that. Views into the site have been set back. Storm ponds have been put up front. Landscaping goes with those. So the view into the project will be through those amenities. There's minimization of tree vegetation and soil removal and grade changes. We've done that. We sited the thing and put low spots in low spots, ridges, you know, or high places where ridges go. The grading will be limited to that necessary to improve the site and no more. Screening of objectionable features from neighboring properties and roadways is accomplished by the setbacks that we've shown on the streets. Water supply was, of course, artesian. Sewage disposal has been mentioned. Solid waste disposal is available in the area from Blue Hen and others. Prevention of surface and groundwater pollution. We, of course, have a closed system. It's curb and gutter, so it will be directed into the curb and gutter system in terms of runoff. Treated in the storm ponds and released at no faster rates than pre-development, and certainly will comply with the pollution control strategy as well in terms of nutrient reduction. There's also minimization of erosion and sedimentation, et cetera, and those things are dealt with by final site plans, and of course the appropriate measures would be taken. Provision for safe vehicular and pedestrian movement within the site and to adjacent ways. This project has essentially got parks that are used as sort of vehicular turnarounds, and of course for pedestrian safety there are sidewalks on both sides and appropriate crosswalks. In fact, there are connections from the project, from these cul-de-sacs to the multimodal path that will be along Route 5 and along one side of Cannon Road and the one that's installed already on Route 5. So those interlinks are there to the multimodal path through the open space. Another issue is preservation and conservation of farmland. We believe we do this by putting development in the appropriate place. In this case, it's where a subdivision already exists. It's not through the preservation of open space, but basically by doing a cluster development with appropriate open space in the appropriate place. Farmland is preserved in other areas. There's an issue of effect on area property values. In today's world, there's no way to know what the effect will be, but the homes that are intended to be there are the same size and scale as the homes in the surrounding neighborhoods. They're simply on smaller lots. It's a more highly amenitized project than most, and I would anticipate from my own personal experience with development that property values will be maintained or even enhanced, depending on the nature of our ridiculous economy. And then there's an effect on schools, public buildings, and community facilities. Based on the large exhibit that I showed you with community facilities in the area, there are fire stations there, schools are there, churches are there, all the public amenities exist to serve the project. And then on-site, of course, will be the parks that I've mentioned already, as well as the swimming pool, clubhouse, tennis courts, and so forth. As far as effect on area roadways and public transportation, as I mentioned, DelDOT, we've been with DelDOT, we've done the traffic study, we've mitigated the impacts based on the improvements that were agreed to. Effect on area waterways, there will be none because of the stormwater management system there and the manner in which those have to be designed. And essentially, that is it. Of course, I would mention that we did go to PLUS, as you're aware. The comments are attached. We've responded to them. There was nothing of merit other than the issue to deal with the pollution control strategy, and we did run a nutrient analysis, and it's in the material that we submitted, and we easily passed muster in that regard. And that is it. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer.
We'll wait till Mr. Schrader is done with his presentation, and we'll run down the line here.
Thanks, Frank. And as much as I hate to get into Frank's presentation, he said that there was 4.9 acres of open space. It's in fact 49.1 acres of open space. And there must be something in the water that keeps us from being able to read acreages tonight. I'd like to just to remind you that, again, Stonewater Creek and Pelican Point are separate subdivisions, that perhaps they were twins at birth, but they have since been separated. As Frank has pointed out and as the material demonstrates in the books, we have complied with the subdivision ordinance. The cluster ordinance has been complied with. We have had previously approved by council the covenants and conditions that would apply to this particular project. They include the agricultural protection notices and the matters that you would normally seek to have reviewed. The density of this project is less than 2 dwelling units per acre, which is well inside the parameters of an AR1 standard subdivision. Our friends at Delaware Department of Transportation require no traffic impact study. In fact, there is reference in their PLUS comments to the fact that they have worked well with the applicants for over the course of 7 years, and that they are pleased with the new loop design that will be used to join phases 4 through 7 with 1 through 3 as a part of that public road system. We have provided to you a copy of proposed conditions and findings of fact that will give you a matrix from which to work should this subdivision meet with your favor. And as a personal privilege, Mr. Chairman, if you'll allow me, I started out as a county attorney in 1972 and had the pleasure of butting heads with a lady by the name of Mary Burton. Mary Burton's daughter, Normalee Derrickson, took up the family business of opposing things in this chamber, as has her daughter, Tiffany. And I'm pleased to point out that the fourth generation has appeared this evening. And if we wonder why it is they do it, it's the environment they're raised in. So congratulations, Tiff. We're available to answer any questions.
All right, sir. Well, we'll see if anyone has any questions. And we'll start with Mr. Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I have to admit that on the previous project that you brought to me, I used up all my sticky notes. So
I'll see if I can get you another load.
I might need another batch for the next presentation you bring to us, Mr. Schrader. But I want to preface my comments that as from my perspective, what we're looking at today is a far superior project than what was last presented to this commission, which, as you stated, we didn't like.
Congratulations to Mr. Key and the design team for that.
Just for points of clarification, these are all single-family homes that are being proposed now, not townhouses or condo units.
Single-family dwellings.
Single-family dwellings. And that this project is separate from Stonewater Creek, and therefore the residents of Pelican, is it now? Thank you. Pelican Point are not members of Stonewater Creek and therefore will not be utilizing the amenities of Stonewater Creek unless they're invited guests.
I assume they'll be invited. I don't know of any reason why they're not, but no, the recreational amenities are intended to be on the Pelican Point side of Route 5.
Right. So that, because I know that was an issue of concern previously that Pelican Point, because it was, you know, a stepchild or whatever one time of Stonewater Creek, is now its own separate entity and would operate thusly. Could you gander when you think phases 4 through 7 might be under consideration, and as a part of that, when those amenities, including the clubhouse and the tennis courts and the other tot lot, might be constructed?
Well, we're going to start with phases 1 through 3, and obviously that means 4 through 7 come after that. I'm not trying to avoid the answer, but we're going to give you a shot, but it's not going to be a definitive 1-year, 2-year, 3-year type answer.
At this point, I think the best absorption rate of homes in the county on any given project is about 3.5 per month. Stonewater Creek is doing pretty well, too. I'm not sure if it's 3.5, but it's one of the better ones. So you would construe that 30 homes to 35 homes a year in the current climate over 233. I mean, that's what you'd have to do. And then if you see improvements in the economy, in the old days, a project like this could do, you know, 100 homes in a year, you know, 125 even. But that, I mean, it's market driven, and I don't really know how to answer it better than that.
Because I do know that in the last presentation, that was also one of my concerns, was that the clubhouse and the major amenities are part of another phase which may or may not be built. And as you gentlemen, having sat through the beginning of the meeting, heard our dilemma about the clubhouse and when that was going to be built and our frustrations with that whole process, I might also envision some of your residents in phases 1 through 3 being frustrated that in the marketing materials there was a clubhouse presented and a pool and all that.
There is another view to that, and that is if you build them early, then there's not much membership in order to support the facility. And the cost of supporting such a facility becomes very expensive and may not be so attractive from a cash flow point of view to the people who are living in the area. It's tricky.
Yeah. Well, gentlemen, based on the materials that you presented to us, you know, in advance of the hearing and Mr. Key's additional comments, I have no further questions at this time, Mr. Chairman.
All right, sir. We thank you. Mr. Burton.
Shock. Mike kind of asked me the timing question. Can you just, are you saying these are state-maintained roads? They're going to be one state-maintained road or no?
No, there's Townsend Road, which comes into the project through phases 4 through 7. Is currently a state-maintained road. It will remain so until it reaches this intersection in 4 through 7. State maintenance will end there, and then a county Type 3 road, a private road, will be built through here where the rest of them are sort of lower construction type. So that connection is what DLDOT is allowing to complete Townsend Road back to Cannon Road. And then this portion of the road north of its intersection here all the way to the property line will be abandoned as a part of the work in 4 through 7.
Okay, so the abandonment of Cannon Road is really not part of this at all?
Townsend. Correct. It's Townsend, yes, but it's really part of 4 through 7. But the alignment of it and these features here are sort of dependent on the approval here. Otherwise, it'll stay the way it is, and then it'll get abandoned as part of 4 through 7 anyway. Either way, it gets abandoned.
Okay. And there's two entrances on 5? On this plan?
No, sir, just one. It's this entrance here directly across from the Stonewater Creek entrance. The other is Cannon Road.
Okay.
It just happens to intersect here. And then these two intersections are onto Cannon Road that are sort of internal to the project.
Okay.
Cannon Road is a state road. Already existing.
Yes.
Right.
Okay. Thank you. No further questions.
All right, sir. Mr. Smith?
Mr. Chairman, I believe I understand the application. Thank you.
All right, sir. Mr. Ross?
Regarding the amenities, ultimately, how are they to be funded, to be paid for?
Amenities within 1 through 3 or 4 through 7?
The entire project, even 4 through 7.
They'll be privately funded by the developer.
By the developer?
Yes.
Is that money put in escrow a little at a time, all up front? How's that?
Well, I guess it depends on the developer. And in my past, it wasn't escrowed or anything like that. It was just financed at the time that, you know, when the time came to build it. It just privately funded.
Are any of the monies from the sales, dues and that sort of thing, HOA fees, are they set aside for any of those amenity?
I think there will be, because under Duke, Iowa, now there's going to have to be a reserve for those types of amenities. I can't tell you what the precise percentage or value is going to be, but I under the new law, I think that they do have to to begin to do that.
One of the problems that we just tried to noodle through, I don't know if we split the baby in half or not, but was because monies were set aside, you know, for those amenities. But part of the caveat was that the developer could borrow against those monies, and he did, or they did. I'm saying he. It's not a gender issue. And then they scooped town. The money was gone. And, you know, that was an avoidable issue. Those monies were set aside. They should have been set aside and not touched. And then we wouldn't have had, you know, the problem we had tonight to face. And so I'm just wondering if that can be addressed up front so that we don't have these types of issues down the road.
I want to give you two additional things to think about, Mr. Ross. One of them is that the amenities that I think are probably of principal concern are in 4 through 7, which is not a part of this application. So I think Mr. Robertson will agree with me. You have slight issue about whether or not we could do anything with it. And the other point that I'd like to make too is that there's different ownership groups between 4 and 7 and 1 through 3. So we can't sit here tonight and say we're going to do X, Y, and Z for 4 through 7 because we don't have that ownership group represented tonight to make that kind of a decision. We understand what you're talking about, and certainly the people that we represent are in the business of developing real estate and understand the need to have recreational amenities in place because it's part of the marketing scheme. You don't promise something that you don't deliver if you intend to stay in the business and continue to develop. These fellows have been in this business at this particular site now since almost 2000, working the Stonewater Creek Pelican Point. We understand all that part, and we acknowledge the concern, but I can't give you a definitive answer because of the two things I just identified.
Well, I can give one definitive answer to it, and that is that on this one, if it's approved and they get final approval, they're not going to get a notice to proceed to build anything until they have bonds and letters of credit in place with the county that guarantees the completion of the whole place, including the amenities. And that's different from the one we heard earlier for a couple reasons. One, it predated the county's requirements for that, and two, as I stated, that was a unique situation where it was a business within a residential project, so it was different. But in this one, like any other subdivision, the county's going to get performance guarantees for completion of all
up
that.
Front.
Yeah, up front, before they start pulling any building permits or doing anything like that.
Perfect. No further questions.
All right, sir. Mr. Lang?
Just for the record, what's the status of phases 4 through 7?
As of this moment, we believe that there's a final site plan approved, and it's inside the sunsetting limit.
That final site plan approval and is a record?
Yes.
For how long has it been a record?
I can't tell you, but I know that it was approved in 2006 by the notes that I have in my file, and it would have been filed no later than 2009, so it would still be inside the 2014.
That's what I'm getting at. You're still under your, you're not into the sunset impact.
We have not expired. Pleased to report that we have not expired. At least we don't think we have. It's not been that bad a day.
Mr. Abbott.
No questions.
Council?
No questions. That was just going to be what Lawrence talked about. The sunsetting is going to drive a lot of this timing-wise. I think that in response to one of the questions from a commission member.
All right, sir, we thank you. Gentlemen, if you'll take a seat nearby, we'll see if there's anyone present with an interest in your application. Is there anyone here that would like to speak in favor of subdivision 2010-6 Cannon Road Investments LLC? Is there anyone here that would like to speak in opposition to subdivision 2010-6? All right, we'll start right up here, sir.
Good evening. Thank you. I'm George Hudson of Stonewater Creek, Rivers Edge Road. And you're right, builders and developers promise and they want to keep them. But I think I heard here tonight that until the community is built, the homeowners don't control the covenants. The developer does for the homeowners association. They can change the size of the houses they want to build. They can do anything in that process. When people come here to live, they look at the area, because a lot of us, like myself, come to retire here. And we want to make sure the communities around us are going to maintain the values that we looked at and that we were promised by the builders and the developers. When you look at this map here, Stonewater Creek across the street has approximately 2 homes per acre. Over here was approximately 2 homes an acre. Right now, you have approximately 5 homes per acre. I don't care what the larger size of the development is, but you're squeezing people in. When you think you're going to build homes of equal or greater value and maintain that on that size lot, it's impossible. The values of the people around the area, Stonewater Creek, will decline. So what we was promised, what we were showed when we came here, and the zoning board approved at that time, we would like to keep that in place because we have a large investment here. We came here and put our final money down to live here. Also, when you talk about the infrastructure, they talked about hospitals, schools, fire, police. Well, when you're going to put these many people coming into the community and that many homes in that area, you're going to have to beef that infrastructure up because it's not going to be maintained by what we currently have here today. So what I'm suggesting is that when you say 1.79 homes per acre, you have approximately 5 homes per acre clustered in, and that's not maintaining the value that we were promised. Also, concern for that development, as like in our development, they never got the drainage straightened out. What's going to happen over there? This developer has not been able to get drainage straightened out. That's a huge problem. Is it going to continue in a tighter environment? I don't think it's going to be maintained because it hasn't been shown to me to this date. I'm a little nervous talking here, but
that's all right.
I want my promises by the builders and the developers to be kept and to maintain the size of the lots and the value of those properties that they're going to continue to build. The same developer owns all this. Builders come and go with the time. Building's good, building's bad, new builder in, new builder out. What they promise doesn't mean what's going to happen. We're talking about sections 1, 2, and 3, and they keep on bringing up 4 through 7. 4 through 7 is so far away, and all the amenities for those people are someplace else 4 or 5 years away, where our amenities, people are going to be coming across the street to use them because they don't have their own pool. Believe me, it happens. I honestly believe that we came here, we were told this is how it was going to be, we were showed the maps of this whole area, and that should be maintained in order to keep the values of our community safe.
All right, sir. We thank you.
Thank you.
Yes. Mrs. Derrickson.
Norma Lee Burton Derrickson, a property owner. I request a portion of Stevenson Road traffic be routed to close Cannon Road. The most direct route for Cannon Road to access 5 is to reopen a portion of Cannon Road. The N&M Burton Farm is in agriculture preservation. Part of the Stevenson Road that separated the farm received approval to be vacated in February of 2009. I have met with Randy Mitchell, an owner, and requested the road to be reopened with the shortest and most direct route to 5 be used for entrance. Ted Bishop informed us that the internal streets had to be redirected. The road that was closed by the state should be reopened for this great traffic increase. As he stated, there could be up to 35,000 people living in this area. The new subdivision would create a very negative impact on the farm from the increase in traffic separating the fields. The hardship to the farm with traffic could be eliminated and provide an easier access with the opening of a small portion of Cannon Road. Since the application is by Cannon Road Investments, LLC, then the entrance on Cannon Road is most appropriate. And I do have a map of where the original Cannon Road was that was closed. And actually, the state closed it because it wasn't used at that time that much from Cannon Road, and they had a lot of trash there, so they closed it and gave it back. That was told to us.
Did you want to submit that,
yes,
your drawing? And then we'll need to keep it, but...
And you'll see where, yeah, the road goes. And actually, there was the state, by when they put a culvert in, it made more wetlands down there because it's too small for... Actually, I didn't know it was a creek. People was called it a ranch.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Yes, ma'am. Who's next? There we go. Now, before you start, you need to bring that baby around here so we can see him. There we go. All right.
Like his poppy, his grandfather.
You know, he kind of does. Jeez.
My name is Tiffany Derrickson. I'm property owner of the 245 N&M Burton Farm District, 170-year-old working farm, which borders the future 233 lots. I am here to protect my farm for my children and theirs. I attended several planning and zoning meetings for the original redistricting from AR to residential for the various subdivisions proposed in this level 4 rural area. However, despite my pleas and requests to deny approval, planning and zoning approved Independence, Stonewater Creek, Double Eagle, Ivy Branch, and Pelican Point. Since the approval of these subdivisions, I've been working hard to protect the Burton Farm District and improve traffic flow and safety in the area. In July of 2006, I wrote the Secretary of Transportation requesting the closure of Stevenson Road adjacent to the Burton Farm District and for traffic to be routed directly to Route 5 via Cannon Road. After several meetings with DelDOT, we petitioned to have the section of Stevenson Road adjacent to Independence vacated, which DelDOT approved in 2009. During the summer of 2008, we met with Randy Mitchell, the developer, to discuss the closing of Stevenson Road and routing traffic directly from Route 5 to Cannon Road. We attended the 2009 planning and zone hearing meeting, which for the same reason. The rezoning tonight will add an additional 233 homes to the area. If planning and zoning approves Cannon Road Investments' request to subdivide the 133 acres into 230 police lots, please require that all traffic from the subdivision be routed through Cannon Road and the section of Stevenson Road adjacent to the Burton Farm District be closed in order to improve traffic flow and safety in the and protect a working farm. Thank you for consideration.
Thank you.
Try,
okay, no, that's all right.
On the mic.
Sounds like we're signing consents.
I'll tell you what, that's, that's a sound we don't get to hear often enough from someone that small. Unfortunately, the crying's usually done by people much larger than that. And all right, up here, we had somebody else right in the front row, I think, wanted to speak.
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, my name is Gerald Brock, and I am a resident of Stonewater Creek, Lot 53, which is 22,435 square feet. I can put three of these houses on my property. We were told when we bought this property by not only the salespeople, who of course do not represent Mr. Handler, But we were told by representatives of Mr. Handler that this site would be developed as proposed. And at the time, this site was proposed for the same size, 1/2-acre lots, as what we presently reside on. I bought my lot and built my house in good faith. I paid pretty good money for it. Luckily, I had it. A lot of people in this community don't. I've heard comments from so many of the old residents of Sussex County about, oh, the nouveau rich are coming to Sussex County and they're running us out of the state. That's not what I desired to do when I came here. I desired to find myself a nice, quiet, slower and lower home. I wanted this kind of lifestyle. I was tired of waiting 3 stoplights to be able to cross an intersection. I got tired of traveling the beltway at 4 miles an hour. I got tired of going to places where the people outnumbered the grass. I was looking for something to a place to retire, to be able to enjoy myself. We were here, what, roughly 8 months ago. Mr. Johnson, at that time, was the one that read the dissenting proposal. At that time, they were going to build 60, now I'm just talking about the one piece, because we were never given access to this map. Even though we came here just 2 weeks ago, we were not able to access these maps. We were told the ones that we were given were the most recent maps. And they're nowhere as close to this. So all I can say from having known and having read and examined is the area, that side of Cannon Road. At one time, that whole area was approximately 40-something homes. It went to 66, and now it's at 70-something. Of course, the density is just a little bit less than it was, or than it was at one time. But at the same time, all they've done is open spaces, put cookie-cutter houses on really small lots. And I can tell you from experience from Stonewater Creek, if the swales, the drainage is no better than Stonewater Creek. The swale in front of my house, I've been living there for over 5 years, the swale has been dried maybe 20 days. We have to always cut that piece of grass with anything other than the lawnmower. Most of the time, a weed whacker. It doesn't look good. It never does. It never will. Water is almost always there. You can see the mosquito larva flying all over the place. The birds are always there eating. We've got a few frogs in there that helps keep it down. They've been in there 6 different times to repair it. And each time they do a worse job than what was there before. When I first moved there, the only thing I ever had, it wouldn't get dried, but it was sort of just barely muddy. Today, I've got ooze. 4 or 5 inches of water for at least 6 months of the year. And even in the summer months, in August, I have to water my lawn. It keeps it wet. It does not drain. My neighbor has the same problem. We have been told, that's it, we're not doing anything else. I spoke to DENREC, and they said there's nothing we can do about it. We've already approved it. And so we're stuck with that kind of property. And now he's going to build tiny little cookie-cutter houses. And these people are going to have the same drainage problem we do. In fact, it's probably going to be worse because of the density. Yes, he has a lot of open spaces. But you can spit from one side of the lot to the other. These lots are only 60 feet wide, barely over 7,000 square feet. We were told that it would stay around 2,200 square feet when we moved there. And we bought in good faith, thinking this is going to be a very nice place to retire. And if it was the way that it was promised, I wouldn't be here today. I'd be accepting the status quo. Probably still fighting over my swale, but not without much hope. When Mr. Johnson read the opposition here several months ago, every point he brought up is still valid today. And yet, more homes, smaller lots. But because they leave more open space, the density is just barely more. All I'm asking is that you guys take a real long look and look and see the sheet that's being pulled over your head. Because that's what it is. It's just a light show. And there is really no improvement on what was proposed here last summer. Thank you very much.
All right, sir. We thank you. Okay, who's next? Yes, sir.
My name is George Lovenhofer, also reside in Stonewater Creek. Mm-hmm. I agree with my neighbors and have to bring up some other concerns.
Okay.
As the volume, it's hard to see in this picture that where Stonewater Creek is and these entrances, there's going to be traffic and accidents. It's just the volume, and probably someday it'll be a street light. And my other main concern is the environment and the resources, natural resources. Now, they're talking about green area they're showing there a little bit. I guess they're going to put in trees and shrubs, I don't know. But they're doing our 5 and 6 phase that was completely woods, and I'm sure it's, I don't know how big it is, it must be 100 acres or more, because it's putting in over 200 homes on half acres. And they don't leave any trees. Very, very few. And most of the trees belong to the people that own the property already. And I think that's a crying shame, especially in today that we're so concerned about our environment. Basically, that's what I have to say. Thank you.
All right, sir. We thank you. Anyone else like to speak in opposition? Anyone on the commission have any questions? There being none, we'll close the public hearing. We'll invite you to remain with us for the rest of the evening to see if we make a decision, or you may wish to call the office in the morning.